Come on. You know, if you want one that bad, go out to the stationery store and get one, okay? Bring it back, and I'll give you a certificate, okay? One that says, very greedy and selfish. You know, I'm sorry. We give certificates out, but mostly the reason I do it is because when people go to a long training like that, I like them to know, and every single certificate that is given out by anybody that I have as a trainer is signed in ink by me. And the reason is because there's lots of people who seem to come up and they have certificates and they are not signed by me. And I found that there's a pattern here. The pattern goes like this. Those people who came up and it doesn't have my signature on it have a tendency to have things, how can I say it, wrong. That would be the word I would use. And anybody who is willing to give out certificates about neurolinguistic programming and to steal from me, probably I wouldn't want them rolling around in my brain or my wallet. Now, the word that pops into my mind, if you have a certificate and it ain't signed by me in ink, the word that pops into my mind is refund. Okay? Because long time ago, Moses went up the mountain. The burning bush was there, and he came down with a really good rule called thou shalt not steal. Okay? And see, you know, I think people shouldn't steal unless they have no fucking alternative. If you're starving and you need to feed your kids, you have my permission to steal. Because on this planet, there's enough for everybody to have warm, full, and dry, and we're getting closer. I mean, even governments are figuring out that people starving to death is not a good idea. But to me, when people have warm, full, and dry, and they start stealing from each other unnecessarily, this does not strike me as the foundation on which I want to learn new technology to help people. And so sometimes some of your trainers have this confused with selling aluminum siding. See, I try to tell them, look, if you want to be one of these guys that goes out and cons people and does shit, sell aluminum siding. You'll make a lot more money. This stuff is a lot more work, and it's about getting people to be able to be honest with themselves and to get the things they want. A gentleman just came up here to me, and I like this when this happens, and he said, I was in a certain course, and I stopped, and I thought, what the hell is he talking about? I can't even remember the course. And that's because I do a fair number of these, even though it says on the internet I'm dead. Do you know how many times they've killed my ass on the internet? It's so weird. Why are they so excited about the concept? He's finally dead. You know, I don't know what the thing is. I mean, even when I went in the hospital, you know, I got sent, right, to my house condolence things to my wife. Big reefs of things. We're so sorry to hear, you know, Dr. Bandler has finally passed away. Get used to it, guys. I'm not going anywhere for a very long time. They've tried to kill me over and over again, and I ain't going nowhere. So just settle in, you know, and stuff. The odds are I'm going to outlive every fucking one of them. Right? And not only that, probably one night when they least expect it, they're going to hear a knock on the door and they're going to open a door and it's going to be me or one of my friends. And I have friends that, well, let's put it this way, they may not be of this earth exactly, but they're really pissed off, right? Because I didn't make all this stuff myself. I had help. I've had help through the years. Most of what I've learned from my clients, not from all these brilliant people. I've learned from people sitting on the bus. I've learned from everybody that I could. Because I find that there's really ingenious things. That little strategy about remembering names came from a little woman from India. The only part I didn't tell you about is that when she was going and doing all of this, she always went and put her finger right here. Right? And I always wondered what that little dot was for. And when I told her that, she laughed. And all these other people who weren't from India got uptight. They said, well, you know, you shouldn't make fun of other cultures. And the woman from India turned around and looked at him, and she said, he didn't hurt my feelings. They're looking for ways to say that what I do is offensive. You don't have to look very far. Just name something. I'll offend you if you want to be offended. I mean, some of the stuff that I've done, you know, has gotten me kicked out of places that, you know, they invited me to, you know. And, you know, they made the mistake. They invited me, you know, to manager's clinic, you know. Manager's clinic, I'd heard it was. I didn't even know what they did there, you know. And they said, this is one of the most prestigious things of your life. I got there. There was all these old farts, right, that maybe in 1920 were innovative. But excuse me, you know, get a calendar. They took me in, and they took me on grand rounds. I found this offensive. I don't go into people's rooms without asking them. That's just the way I am. And if anybody goes in, I don't even let the maid in my hotel room. I clean it myself. I don't like people digging through my stuff. You know, I have too many experiences of leaving a videotape machine in my hotel room, one that's activated by motion, right? You should see what goes on. They try your clothes on. It's really bizarre. A little of your cologne go through your jewelry, you know, do pornographic dances and stuff, right? But then when you show them a videotape, they go, you violated my rights. I go, uh-uh, this is my room. I didn't videotape you. There wasn't supposed to be anybody in my room. It says, do not disturb, do not enter. Now I change the locks on the rooms. That finally keeps them out. I have my own lock that I carry with me that I put on the door because I don't care what you do. They burst in on you constantly at ungodly hours, like 8 in the morning with a vacuum cleaner in one hand. You know, I have this nightmare, the horror of the Holiday Inn, you know, where suddenly I'm sucked up a vacuum cleaner at 4 in the morning by some hideous maid. And, you know, because if you don't let them in, you know, they call you on the phone. It's the weirdest thing, you know, because I put do not disturb, and if they knock on the door and then they find out they can't open it, because I have this little thing, costs $5. You put it on there, and there's no fucking way you can get that door open. I don't care who you are. You'd have to chop it in half. It's a really ingenious little device. And I do it because it was the only way I could keep my kids out of my office. When they were young, it was constantly banging on the door. You know, they always wanted something. I just shoved money under the door. They'd go away. But to me, you know, the thing is with all of this nonsense that if you want to go to some good programs, that I've worked with lots and lots of people, but right here in town, that's not it. Where did it go? Here it is. John Lavelle's going to come to town. And when John Lavelle comes to town, if you want to learn something about DHE, this guy's great. And John's a great person upon everything else. What I like about John is John takes his stuff seriously. He lives what he does. And John has done the kind of work that I appreciate. John works with factories. He goes into all the blue-collar workers, you know, and works with unions and all of those kinds of things. You guys, Haagen-Dazs ice cream would have been nothing without John Lavelle. You know, I mean, because they don't come from a country that understands our country at all. You know, these people came in and said, "Hey, now you want some Moscow?" You know, and like that. And people went, "We don't want to work for these people. They sound funny. We don't like it." Right? And, you know, John does very well with all this stuff and takes the same principles and applies them everywhere. He's like me. You know, when you're dealing with people, I don't think it makes a difference where in the world. See, like when they invited me to go to India, I went, "Wait a minute. You want me to go to India and help them to relax?" Excuse me. I felt very foolish, right? These people have been meditating for so much longer than the country we live in existed. It's ridiculous. You know, this country is so young, the U.S. I mean, for me to go there and teach them, you know, I said, what am I going to do? Go in and teach them, you know, how to go into altered states? I said, yeah, right. I said, I don't think I should go and do this. And they said, no. India has a middle class with a larger population than the United States has people. And they said, and just like here in the United States, they're tense and as fucked up. And I said, well, that'll be okay. I can do that. And when I got there, I had the most marvelous audience I've ever had because you know what they understood? They understood things I can't teach in this country. I just can't. I can't even talk about it. People think I'm fucking loony. They go, yeah, now we're willing to believe and understand this, but don't talk about that spiritual stuff, you know. We don't want to hear anything about that. But in this country, this guy came up to me, and he looked so sad. And I said, what's going on? And he said, at lunch today, I went to this astrologer, and they gave me afterwards this silver talisman and told me it was charged up and it would help me and stuff like that. And it does not feel like it has anything. And I put my hand on it, and I said, it doesn't. And he said, I have been cheated. I am unhappy. And I said, well, and then there's somebody else in the audience said, We have decided the entire group will go and visit this person after the workshop and correct this. After all, he spent 500 rupees or whatever they are. Now, I'm sorry, I thought he said dollars. Rupees, 500 rupees is like a penny, I guess. I don't know. Inflation was so out of control when I was there, they wouldn't use credit cards because by the time they turned them in, it wouldn't be worth anything, which I thought was a very cool idea for them to do that. They goes, sorry, if you're going to cheat us, we're not going to do it. So I took the thing and I said, well, wait a minute. I said, you guys don't really need to go and lynch this guy. I said, but do go paint a sign. This guy's a cheat outside of the building. But I think what we should do is make sure this guy gets his money worth. So I had everybody in the audience go inside and do the same thing you were doing, right? Only I picked who did what. Had everybody over here do something, everybody over here did something. And I held the thing up on the chain and I had them all focus on it to the point where the damn thing was glowing, right? And then when I put it on him, it was giving off a shine you could see. And then they weren't impressed by this at all. They went, well, that's good. Thank you very much. Now, can we get down to the interesting stuff? And I said to somebody, I said, what'd you think about that? And he said, well, we do that at the temple all the time. Right? We had a guy in the workshop, which I think is very cool. When I went there, they had me give a little intro, and they needed a place to do it, so they used this guy's temple. And his name was so long, I can't even pronounce it. That when they introduced him, it was like consonants just kept coming out, one right after the other. And I was trying to like imagine how you would put them together. I couldn't even do it. And I looked at him with fear in my eyes, and he said, just call me Mr. B. And I said, I can do that. But I went out, and I gave a little lecture, and they had people that came, and it was open to the public. It didn't cost anything. There were a couple of hundred people there. And when I was done, this guy walked up onto the stage and looked at these people, and he said, this is more important than I thought it was. And then proceeded to talk to them, scold all these people and tell them that what they had to do with this. And then he turned around, and he walked down, and he said to the person who had hired me to go there, he said, I want to go to this workshop. Where is it? And I said, well, you know, I think you should go as my guest. And he said, I don't do that. He said, if I want something, I pay for it. If I don't want something, I don't. And he reached under this robe and pulled out a roll of money about this fucking big, which why he has a temple and I don't. Right? But this guy came every day, sat down, did every exercise that we did. And when he walked, everybody like stepped aside, you know. I mean, he's, you know, a high holy man there. But he's not so high that he's not above learning something that he wants to know. He now teaches this stuff. Which I like. I get the greatest kick out of this. And he gave it its own name, right? And he uses Hindu words instead, which is fine with me. And he teaches people, and he teaches them how to do things so that they can function in their life better, which is what a holy man should do. It's what a clinician should do. It's what a teacher should do. It's what every manager should do. You should be able to make it so. And this guy who came up here said, well, I went to your workshop, and I did what you told me to. I doubled my income in half the time, which is the way it should be. If you get paid by the success, you'll have a tendency to be more successful. People say you're silly because you charge by the change. I don't want to get paid for people to be there for an hour. I want them to get paid because they can get on with their life, make more money, be happier, quicker, faster. And the trick is not to dwell upon what's wrong, but to dwell upon what will work. And when you find out, because I always gather information, I want to know, how do you depress yourself? You know, how are you afraid? And the reason I want to find that out is I want to make it so that the idea of ever doing it again seems ridiculous. Because as I ask questions, I go, so what you do is you have this voice inside your head telling you you're a stupid shit. And it's screaming really loud this close. And they go, yeah. And I go, and how often do you do this? And they'll go, well, it's like it happens all day long. And I go, wow, then do you get paid for this? And they always go, well, no. And I go, you just enjoy people screaming that close? And they go, well, no. And I'll go, has it ever occurred to you to just stop it? And they go, no. Because I want them, the minute it happens again, to feel, I don't have to do this. Because they are, but they don't know it. They don't realize that can flatten that out a little bit? That what's going on is that they're engaging. When you look at your TV screen or your computer screen, even though there's a still image on it, it's still making every dot over and over and over again. The same thing is true about every decision you've ever made in your life. every belief you have, and every voice, sound, and feeling that you have. You've just gotten good at the ones you don't like. But nobody has told you. Instead, they told you there's deep, hidden, inner meaning. Ooh. Well, I looked. I'm sorry, there's none there. Many of you did what I did. I went through all this encounter group crap, and I found out who I really was and vomited. But it doesn't matter who you really are, because you're not. You're a learning machine. Now, if you're capable of doing what we did before lunch, okay, you turned around, you went into a powerful state and went bang. Now, if we add to that a few questions, a little enthusiasm, if you go into that state, then what's going to happen is every word you use is going to become more powerful. It's going to become more powerful in the sense that when you ask people, because they always tell you what they don't want. They go, well, I don't want to be angry all the time. And I go, okay, then give me a list of the other really powerful emotions that you feel. How many really powerful emotional states do you have that are totally... Oh, okay, all right. I know, I'm sorry. I break everything. I know. I was picking up the police band. Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. It works better if I push the right button. It usually works better, too. The question is, where's that button and how do you push it? And with what? I saw that picture, you. Now, you see, lots of people say things like they say, well, you know, I don't want to be afraid. I don't want this. But you see, you can't change people by removing things. You have to create a void and then fill it. So the trick is to be able to put something stronger, more dramatic. If people can't come up with more than five really wonderful feelings that they have every day, then every day is going to suck. Excuse me, but that's just a technical description. To me, that you have to really practice getting the neurology that you're God or gods or God-given or goddess given right. Whether you believe that, you know, it's all sort of random evolution, I got news for you. It does not account for a lot. See, to me, if it was random evolution, then his nose would be on his side of his face and his would be on the top of his head. To me, it's all really quite organized. And the more you study genetics, the more you study physics, the more you find out that the universe is really a miraculous place. And that what it is that we're going to be able to do as a species in the future, well, we've got to get on with this evolution thing, and we haven't got the time to wait for it to happen randomly. The cool thing is when you cut your finger, not only does it heal, it knows when it's done. You know what that means? It means there's something that says stop the process. Now, that means that there's a two-way communication system between cells and you. And this is important. It means that really in evolution, we can now consciously intervene. And what the work that I've done over the years for is really all about is about learning to evolve deliberately in your own lifespan, to evolve your consciousness. And we've never had tools so where we could take our own consciousness and evolve it and aim it and modify it. See, to me, I believe that evolution, like the next evolutionary step, is obviously going to be to have an output for the visual channel, because we have input and output for all the rest. Makes sense. And a lot of what they call ESP and psychic stuff, I know that it's simply something that we're going to have to do. It's not going to happen to us. That as we become more conscious of the things, people are all over the face of the earth, before they could communicate, every single culture has representations of auras. Right? Children, before they know better, have no problem seeing them. Lots of other things, too. They do tons of psychic stuff till it gets stomped out of them. Now, wait a minute. How many of you had an imaginary playmate when you were a kid? Right? Do you miss them? Imaginary pets? How many of you? Now, I'm going to make a comment, which is that sometimes those were imaginary, and sometimes I don't think they were. There's literature, from the beginning of time and the beginning of writing in every culture that was educated, Chinese, Ireland, all over there, about there being other entities on this planet. Now me, I don't care if there is or not. I don't care if they're imaginary or not, but I think it sucks that the word used to is the big thing because it gets kicked out of every person. Since I can't see my child's, what I like to call familiar, some people call hallucination, therefore they're not allowed to have it. And I don't think that's right. See me, I had a client, and this guy's name was Andy. He's the best schizophrenic I ever had. I've worked with lots of them, but this guy was priceless. He was so cute. He was a paranoid schizophrenic. And they asked me if I would work with this guy, and his brother was very disappointed in the work that they'd done, and he wanted to get him out of the mental hospital. And it was his brother. It was his only living relative. And I said, yeah. I said, but I can't do anything because these psychiatrists have them under their control. I said, you have to get their consent and bring them. And if you do, I'd really like it if they would take him off the drugs slowly and bring him here in a couple of months. So they brought Andy in, and the psychiatrist, the two of them sat down and had to tell me what was really going on. You know how psychiatrists can be, since they have such a firm grip on reality. Like they tell me, they hate the words I use because they're too long, neurolinguistic programming, you know. Can't I use short, more meaningful words like id and ego? Superego? Complex? Right? Anyway, they told me, they said, well, you know, he's very delusional. And I went, me too. But I live my delusions. See, I think you can pretend anything and master it if you do it just right. See, it turns out, the only two courses I did badly in college, Psych 1A and public speaking. Well, I went back and challenged my grade in Psychology 1A because, as it turns out, I'm right. You know, because when it gets down to it, you know, Freud, all those people, dead, every one of them. And as soon as you've been dead for a long time, hopefully somebody's come up with better ideas. You know, I don't plan to die for a long time, but when I do, I'm hoping that somebody can come up with better ideas. This shouldn't be the end of it. We need to evolve in all kinds of ways. Now, as an organism, your ability to know what to move towards and what to move away from, and to be able to figure out things. See, now that you have on your control panel this thing where you can... How many of you moved your confusion to understanding? You remember that? Now, do you understand more? Right? See, this means that of the data you got in the world, you can now process that data and reprocess it. Now, the thing I want you to try is, you know, you did this with each other. Just tonight, when you want to feel weird, I want you to go back. You remember their confusion and their understanding? Take your understanding, move it to their confusion, then to their understanding. Now you will have two ways of understanding. So you'll know more than twice more than you already know. See, if you don't keep re-understanding things in new ways, then you're going to end up being like all the people I met in college that were know-it-alls. Guys who taught physics and had never done it. Guys who taught chemistry who'd never done any chemistry other than inside their head, and the chemistry they did in there was repetitious. See, until you try to understand things in a new way and become involved in them, it's always going to be the same. Now, I want you to try a little experiment, which is, what I want you to do is to just find somebody else in here, get a new partner, find somebody different. And what I want you to do, one person be A, one be B, and all I'm going to have you do is I want you to ask that person to think of some place in their life where the way in which they act, right, if they were a different person, other people in that situation do things in a way where they're very, very successful. But basically, they're too timid or they're just stuck. Doesn't matter. Because a lot of people tell me, can you help me remove this block? And I go, where is it? And they go, it's inside. And I go, well, how do you know it's there? And they go, well, every time I try to express myself to my wife, I just feel blocked. And I'll punch them right in the stomach, boom, like that. And I go, feel better? And they go, no. And I go, well, it's not there. Now, where is it? Right? Now, the thing is every time they're with their wife, they go into a set of feelings. Whatever those set of feelings are, if they call it blocked, fine. That just means they went to too much therapy. You know, your therapy can be a very frightening thing when people talk to you. When they come in and they go, well, you know, I feel like I have very low self-esteem. And I go, well, pump it up. You know, I go, where exactly does this steam come in? And anyway, I said, because I tell you what, I can heat some up on the hose, put our hose out. Well, exactly where do I shove it in to increase it? A number of orifices come to mind. And they go, well, it's not that kind of thing. And I go, then why are you talking about it that way? Speak like a person. You know, even these neurolinguistic programmers drive me fucking nuts, man. They come in and go, I'm a visually dissociated kinesthetic auditory asshole. You know, don't give me that shit. Talk to me like a person. You know, I mean, you know, if you're going to talk about experience, sound like it. Whenever you make up codes and your clients can't understand you, you just become more of a dipshit. You may be a certified dipshit, but you're still a dipshit. See, to me, what I want you to do is to have, you don't need to know what it is. You don't need to know where it is. All you need to know is that when they stop and they think about this, have them say, stop and think about it. See what you'd see if you're there, hear what you'd hear. Look at the way they look. And odds are they won't be beaming and shining because they don't like it. There aren't positive feelings and negative feelings. That's a lot of electrical crap. There are feelings that you don't like and ones you do. It's that simple. And if you have ones you don't like, it's probably because they get in your way. That if you, the way you feel keeps you from speaking and acting and being successful. What makes it so this guy can increase his income the way he did? Because when he goes back and engages in the same activities, he doesn't hesitate, right? He tries things, he has more fun, and he don't put up with shit, and he doesn't wait. If you don't waste your time, you'll make more money. It's just that simple. That's what it is. It doesn't have anything to do with any deep psychological stuff. It's that you stop fucking around and get on with it. You know, if you get stuff, people say, you've written so many books. Actually, I haven't written a book in 10 years, right? But when I decided to write books, man, I read 5 of them at a time, right? I mean, I'm still the person that when I decide to write, I write 2 different things at the same time, one with each hand. I find it goes faster that way. Now, people go, well, how do you do that? And I go, easy, right? I start this, I know what I'm going to do, and I start that one going, and then I think about this, and I start that going, and then I come back to this. I'm never doing more than one thing at a time. So why should it be hard? Multi-level communication, sure you can deliver 11, 20 messages simultaneously, but never at any instance are you doing more than one thing at a time. Now, just since you don't realize this is kindergarten, if you go to the workshop that John's doing here, if you go to workshops with Barb, if you go to workshops with people who, you know, at least if they've had some training, you know, whether they certify you or not, I don't care, there's still a lots of body of knowledge. I've been a busy boy over the years. But the most important thing and what it all boils down to is what we're going to do now. It all boils down to when you look at that person, they are not shining, they are not happy, therefore they are not efficient. You cannot pick up a girl in a bar when you're terrified out of your mind, when you feel like the gravity has gotten heavy, when you look across the room and you go, she's so beautiful, she'll never like me. And you have a voice inside your head going, she'll spit on you, you'll be embarrassed, you're going to get rejection, and your heart starts to beat and your hands sweat. And you feel terrified, and as you begin to take a step across the room, gravity gets heavy. And then you walk up. Even if you do force yourself to walk up, you're going to go, boom, you know. And when you say, would you like to give me a phone number, young girl? You know, I'm sorry, but most women are going to suddenly feel terrified. Their hands will start sweating, right? They'll feel awkward, and they'll go, I don't know. Who are you? I mean, if people like this can meet each other, it's a fucking miracle. Now, the thing is that when you look at the world, see, to me, people need to realize that you cannot find someone to love if you can't be rejected at least 100 times, 1,000 times, because otherwise you're going to end up with the wrong person. You need to do is get over there, and if the person rejects you, go, wow, at least I didn't marry them. When you meet somebody and they go, what do you want? Say to yourself, I could have this bitch in my life forever. Excuse me, I thought you were somebody else. Do you know where the cigarette machine is? And by the way, you know that attitude? You can get that fixed. People always look at you and go, well, I never. And I go, and I won't either. I go, just, you know what? I always look at them and I go, a curse upon you. May your orgasms never get there. You know that stuff works if you do it right. You should see when I walk by a church now, you know, they'll slam the door closed. They know who I am. I'm the one that's trying to come up with ways of doing things. I saw this guy in the Philippines, right? And he throws electricity through acupuncture needles. And they had him on film and crunched up paper, threw it on the ground, and went, phew! And it burst into flames. And Richard went, oh, man, I got to learn this. IRS audit, what could be better, man? Man, nothing like you give all the receipts to them, and when they pick them up, poof, they burst into flames. Then you look at them and you go, oh, Social Security number, 666666666. Just a coincidence. Ha, 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 ha. Believe it. Now, you were intending to have a future, weren't you? That's not too loaded of a question. Now, what I want you to do is, when you look at this person, what I want you to do is to realize it's only your job now to understand what would they need. Because to me, the word is more. Okay. So what I do is I say, well, what do you think you'd have to feel if you felt excited, happy, thrilled, curious? In fact, I like to ask people, is there anything that's irresistible to them? I mean, for some people, all you have to do is say the word chocolate. And they go, nyang, like this lady right here. What's your name, ma'am? Okay, you're good. Could I borrow you for a minute? Come on, why don't you come and sit up here? See, I have the best view. I get to watch everybody respond. I'll give you a chance now, too. Okay. No, I just want to straighten them out. It's driving me fucking crazy. I know Kay goes, can you make it level? Yeah, oh, that's very good. Now, well, that's what happens when I take off the glasses that I made in my head. See, I finally, I was in an accident. I'm a little accident prone, in case you guys haven't noticed. And the thing about blowing up the high school, well, it wasn't really my fault, right? And I didn't blow up the whole high school, like they said, just part of it. But I was in the chemistry lab, and I had the stuff, and there were two ingredients and two things, and it said, never put vial A in vial B. And I looked down and just, it said vial A, vial B in bold letters. So I didn't read the other letters, right? Well, you know how that works. And because I remember turning my hand like that, and then I remember seeing the science lab moving away like this. And I said to myself, aren't I against the back wall? Right? And I looked down, and the building is kind of on a slant, and gee, the lawn and people were eating lunch below me. And I'm still sitting on the stool. It had wheels on it. You know, those big, tall things have wheels on it. And I looked this way, and God, did I have a great view out across the valley, you know? And then I noticed I was on fire. And something inside my head went, you know, there's something that's not quite right about this, right? And then I felt a stool slip from underneath me, and I watched the front part of the building collapse down like this, and I thought, must be an earthquake. And then a voice in my head said, where did the fire come from, Richard? Right? And I realized I didn't have glass beakers in my hand anymore, and I went, oh, shit. But you know, the weirdest thing, you know, about coincidence, I went right through the window and into the Dean of Boys thing. So the guy that was going to punish me, I got sent directly there. And I, you know, that's when I went, man, there's got to be a God. Because you know what? Broke my fall so I didn't get hurt in front of that window. That glass would have cut me to shreds. Except he was standing out there paddling this other kid. And he stood up. Whack! I hit him just like that through the plate glass window. And I didn't have a single shred of glass in me. I was totally unhurt. Isn't that great? And I visited him in the hospital repeatedly, too. I didn't do it on purpose or anything. But they didn't let me go back into chemistry class. In fact, no one could. But when I got into college, and they said that I could take any course I wanted, the first thing I signed up for was chemistry. And I guess somebody looked through my transcripts, because when I got to class, picked up this card, and he said, is there a Mr. Bandler in this class? Looked over his glasses like this, and he said, I have something for you. And I came down, and he said, take this card and go to the counselor. And I said, but I'll miss the class. And he said, that's the point. But that's okay. I just made up another name and went as two students. I just wanted the learning. I didn't care about the fucking degree. I can make those too, you know. I'm a university. I made myself one. The only cost I found out, I thought, how do they make a university? I found out what they did, so I registered. I'm now a university. That's cool. I'm also a religion, too. I registered myself as a religion. I'm the Church of Kicking Priests. Anyway, just turn around. I want them to be able to see. I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to think of something that I know you enjoy, because it's pretty obvious, that chocolate. So you just say the word. Now, see, it's one thing to like chocolate. That can get in your way sometimes, or not. It doesn't matter. But the fact that it's something that's good, right? Now, what we want to do is I want you to look at where chocolate is, and what I want you... Yeah, you don't have to point. I can see it. Yeah, that's right. That's okay. We're going to do that. See, what we want to do is we want to be able to make it so, because this is a good feeling, but it's not good enough for me. I'm just a funny kind of guy. I'm never satisfied. It's always more, 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 more. So just close your eyes, because I know this little trick, right? What I want you to do is, first thing is I want you to think of something that you... that when you go to do it, you really want to do it, but you're nervous, you get in your own way, you hesitate, you don't get to it. And if you did, it would make life more successful for you. I mean, you know, because I know married couples, and the women can't even just walk up and undress their men. They talk to them first, and they get in fights. Silly. Start with a zipper. It'll all be different. You know, and they always go, but I could never do that. Sure you can. All you need is to think of it as a chocolate zipper. And they always say therapy is slow and painful. Now what we need to do is I want you to go and think of whatever it is that you hesitated to do. That's right. And I want you to double the size of it. Turn the brightness up. And say inside your head, woo. Then what I want you to do is I want you to hear five voices behind you, all in harmony, going, I want it, I want it. That's much better than a voice that says, you're a dirty shit, you can never do anything. That's right. Turn the volume up on those voices. There you go. That's right. Right. Now, anytime in the future you begin to have a situation that's anything like that, this is going to happen times two, times two, times two. Involuntarily, the voices... will be there. It'll get louder and louder and louder, and the more you try to resist, the stronger it'll get. Now, where's the tears? Where's the crying? Where's the suffering? In the other people, where it belongs. You like this feeling? Double it then. Oh, you thought I was done, didn't you? I'm just getting fucking warmed up. Do you know that conscious mind does arithmetic? Two times two. That's unconscious. Multiplication is all done unconsciously. There is no division, by the way. That's nonsense. But in the world of experience, unconscious mind, you cannot multiply consciously. It's all done. You say to people, five times five, it goes, 25. The unconscious does it. Right? So, five times as much. Beep. And let's see, what comes after five? Six. 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 Now... does this really frighten you?
What?
Well, is there anything else you've hesitated to do?
What?
Come on, you can be fucked up. Sure you can. You gotta have some limitations, don't you? Let's be realistic, shall we? I mean, everybody's got limitations. You just can't start being happy all the time. After all, there's things that are really important you should suffer about, like, you know, well, you should look in the mirror and go, oh, my face, oh, my hair, my ears, oh, I'll never, you know, I blah, 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 blah. You have to have things to feel bad about, and otherwise you'd do something about them. Deep. Now, I want you to consider, because I want you to think of, in the past when you were in this situation, the way in which you behaved didn't satisfy you. So I want you to do something that I think is very important, and people always do after they're around me. I want you to let your fucking imagination run away with you. Because I want you to come up with at least five really good choices and see exactly what you're going to do. And I want each one to be more fun than the one before it. And when you find the right one, I want you to step inside it so that you'd feel as if you're there, see yourself doing what you'd do if you were there, and know you have no alternative but to do it. So mote it be. And how do you spell fun? That's right. Okay. Now, I want you to open your eyes and look at them. And always feel good when you look at people. Right. Now, do you need to squint to see this? Okay. Is there any question about that here? Okay. When you do this exercise, they should look just like this. Okay. The exercise is real simple. Have them think about something and they go. Right. And then what you do is then you go and you find something that's much better. You ask them, you go, well, there's got to be something in the world that when you think about it, you have to salivate, maybe even lie. Something that's so wonderful. And they go, oh, I can't think of anything. Say, then go back in your mind to when you were younger, not so mature. Go back, think about being a teenager. Doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter even if you ever want to do it again. It only matters that you can go back and realize, I want those sensations, and then I want you to make the pictures bigger, make them brighter. Then I want you to put voices in their head that aren't there. Trumpets, music, whatever it takes, stuff to make it so it's exciting. The inside of most people's heads is so fucking boring and noisy, and they did that. Hey, you know, you interior decorate your house, you clean your fucking car, how about your brain? That's what this is all about. Now, we have more technical things people can teach you about how to do it, but basically every sound you hear in your entire life is something you can put in your head. Every once in a while, I hear a sound like a cash register, right? Give him a chance. He'll get there. Right? Now, I have that in my head for opportunity. I'll be walking along or I'll be talking to somebody and all of a sudden I hear, right? And then I go, ooh. Because if you're looking for opportunity, you know what? You find it. But if you're going, oh, what can go wrong all day long? You find it. But if you program yourself so that you have a crosshairs in the back of your mind going, I'll be walking along. And when I was selling cars, because I used to, that was my hobby. I couldn't see playing tennis. You don't get paid for that, especially the way I play tennis. But so I decided I should have a hobby. I should do something different. So I called up a friend of mine that owned a car lot. This is in the middle of the oil crisis. He owned a Mercedes lot, and he was fucking depressed. And I went down, and all the salesmen were in there on their desk like this. These people were unhappy, and I said, gee, you know, I just felt like selling some cars. Would it be all right? And he said, apparently I've been watching TV, Richard. He said, you know, big cars like this are just not selling. And I said, well, then you won't mind if I sell some, will you? And he said, well, of course not, but you're not being realistic. And I said, I know. And I said, okay. I said, how many cars do you sell a month? And he said, well, we haven't sold any in 2.5 months. And I said, and who killed these people in your showroom? And he said, well, these salesmen, he said, nobody will even come in here. And I said, oh, okay. I said, see that big convertible there? I said, can I have the keys to that, please? And he said, that car, at that time, was $45,000, probably $145,000 now. I said, I just want to use it for a few minutes. Would it be okay? And he said, sure. And I got in the car, and I drove away, and I came back with 8 people jammed in it, right? And they each bought a car. And the salesmen all came up to me, because they had to fill out the forms. I don't do that sort of thing. And I told them they could each have half the commission if they would fill out the forms and stuff. And they all looked at me, and they went, where did you go? And I said, well, I went to the country club, of course. There wasn't anyone here to sell a car to. And I went in, I parked it right in front of the country club, and I opened both doors wide, put the top down, went inside, and said, who in here wants to feel good for the rest of their life? You know, I've never gotten a no to that question. And all these people turned around and said, what do you mean? And I said, come with me. And I had them come outside, and I explained to them simply. I said, you buy a car like this, right? You have a lifetime of great automobiles. I said, come with me. Sit here for a spell. I said, is there ever anything in your entire life that when you saw you absolutely had to have, you wanted it more than anything on the face of the earth? Their eyes shifted up, my hand went over, and then I said, now look at this car. Bang! Now, if that doesn't increase your sales, you haven't been listening. To me, I made it so they wanted it, and I picked people who could afford it. And it's so much true that it's so funny that the same people, because I sold a lot of cars, by the way, you know what I found behind the car lot? A big stack of Cadillacs and Mercedes, used ones. Just sitting out in the weeds, right? And I came in so excited. I said, I found all these Cadillacs and stuff behind the place. Can I sell those too? And they said, well, you can't sell those. Those are gas guzzlers. And I said, watch me. And I got that poor little Mexican guy to go out there, cut the weeds down, detail every car, wash every car, right? And he kept going, what are you going to do, man? What are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to sell all these cars. And I said, I tell you what, you did all of this. I said, I'll make enough off of the commission that you can pick one and keep it. And he says, I'm going to get a Cadillac for washing these cars, plus I get paid by the car lot? And I said, that's the way the world should be. And he said, how long? He said, this could take you years. And I said, I'm planning to have it done by tomorrow. And he went, who are you, man? I said, stick with me, son. Watch and learn. So he followed me. He had his little hose and bucket, and he went with me, and I walked right out and across the street. There's a big Toyota lot across the street. And I walked right up, put my toes right on the edge, so I wasn't on the lot, and stood there like this. And there was this guy looking at this car, and I said, excuse me, sir. And he said, what? And I said, you obviously don't have any children. And he said, children? Yeah, I have 2 children. And I said, oh, you don't like them. And he goes, I love my children. And I said, so you're going to save money on gas? And when you get in a car wreck and your kid's head is split open and the bones are sticking out through the skin and they're dying, it's going to bother you. And he said, what? And I said, 15 miles an hour, this car rolls. It'll crush and be totaled. And the salesman looked up at me and went, who are you? And I said, I was sent. And he walked up and he said, well, I don't know who you are, but you can't talk to my customers that way. And I said, I'm not on your car lot. And I said, by the way, what was your name? And he was standing there noticing how interesting his palm was and reviewing his ethics. And I said, have you got a minute, sir? I'd like to show you something. And I took him around to the back and I said, you see this Lincoln Continental? I said, if you hit this Lincoln Continental with that Toyota, you can clean the Lincoln up with a Brillo pad. Not to mention the fact it has a 50-gallon tank. You won't have to buy gas so often. You keep it tuned up. And it only costs $4,000. That Toyota's $15,000. You can buy a lot of gas with $12,000. Plus, you buy a water pump for that, it's $500. You need one for this, it's $30. Plus, you can understand how to fix this, and you got leather seats, power windows. I can't say anything about the 8-track tape deck, though. But with $12,000, you could probably put another stereo in there, and you could never be hurt. I sold 45 cars in 2.5 days. And the people at the Toyota lot started putting a new fence up, thereby making it so that no one could tell it was a car lot. That's okay. I spray painted an arrow on the fence pointing to our lot saying, "Please enter here." Now, thank you, by the way, Kay. You did that beautifully. The idea I want to get across to your mind is whenever you find limitations and you feel stuck, you're wrong. And if you look at it that way, if you go, "Man, this is impossible," you have to have a voice in your head that goes, "Wait a minute. It's not what it is that's impossible. It's what I'm doing that makes it not happen." The more you make it so that instead of blaming yourself, you just simply take responsibility in the sense that you go, "What I'm doing produces this effect. So fuck it. Do something else." And if you start randomly trying new things, you'll randomly find new things. And if you do it with a sense of humor, of course people weren't changing in therapy because they had them get worse. They said, "All right, into your childhood, jump into your pain. Let's go back and relive every fucking trauma you have. Let's cathart, cry, moan, piss." Because they believed insight that if you knew why you were fucked up, then you wouldn't be. Unfortunately, we've tried this for a number of years and it doesn't work. It just means that not only do you know why you're fucked up, now you have much more elaborate excuses for it than you ever did. So people end up blaming their parents for things, but they're still fucked up. Because it doesn't matter whose fault it is, because things don't cause things. The Newtonian universe, well, we've known better than that for a long time. That's what this boy was about. He said, "Hey, man, it's all relative. Depends upon when you start looking at it. You start looking at it at a certain point in time, it's somebody's fault. But then you could say, well, it's not their fault." Right? It goes way back further. You want to know why you have problems? You were born. Cause of everything. Okay, now that you know why, let's forget about it and move on. You want to know why in the future you're going to have trouble being as fucked up as you were? Because your unconscious has got more of a sense of humor than it ever had. And when you do this exercise, it's going to be so easy to feel different about stuff that whenever you start to get really stuck in a set of feelings that you don't like, something inside you is going to go, "Wait a minute. Do I really want to be arguing with my wife all night? Or would I rather she took her blouse off?" Now, if you ask that question, and the answer is you'd rather fight all night, then when you have that coronary, you deserved it. It's just that simple. We just have habits, and if somebody's got to stop, and the trick is to go first, and not to be mad at yourself because you did something stupid, just be relieved when you stop doing it. And remember, you can't go from a bad feeling into being good ones. First thing you have to do is laugh. Every time you have made a new learning, you've done this. Did they change your phone numbers here in Chicago? They do it everywhere. Yeah, okay. All right, so what happens with Richard, who has lived in the same place his whole life, pretty much, you know? I moved around as a teenager and stuff, but then once I got in a house, I stayed there till the house fell down. I finally had to move, right? So recently, my wife and I snuck out, moved away from the kids. They didn't know for 2 months. And they had to get their own place to live. But before that, I lived there, but the telephone company came along and said, "Hey, your phone number's now different." And I went, "Oh, yeah? What do I care? Fine." But then I was at the store, and I forgot what I was supposed to buy. So I went over to the phone, and I dialed, of course, the old number, right? And when it goes, "I'm sorry, this number is no longer in service." And I went, "Oh, fucking son of a bitch." Bam, and slammed the phone down. I said, and like that. And then I stopped like that. I picked up the phone, and I dialed the same fucking number again. Then I had to wait, get the new number, and I called, and I was pissed off. Well, 3 days later, I'm back at the store, and I forgot what I was supposed to buy, and I walked over and dialed the old number again. This went on for fucking months, right? Till the time I went to reach for the phone, and I started laughing. That's the time that I dialed a new number. And probably you've done the same. When you keep doing the things, I moved one block from where I used to live, and for months I would drive home and drive in the old driveway. And I'd get furious at myself. And I'd drive back. Next day, same thing again. Right? It wasn't until I started going that street and started laughing that I started going to the new house. The same thing is true. The altered state produced by laughter with endomorphines gets you high enough that you can learn something new. So therefore, being able to go into altered states is vitally important to being able to learn new things. Look at her face now. This is what you want to look like. Now, because if you keep doing this every day, she's going to get younger and younger. This is how come Barb didn't end up having to die, because she wasn't the same person. I'm sorry, I'm not the person with a terminal disease. I'm having too much fun, right? Because all this enjoyment, all of this stuff, changes your skin, your body, and every organ in it. And I'll tell you, for some reason, if you're in stress all day, every day, it'll make you fucking sick. But if you spend more days more healthy, more faster, you get healthier quicker. This is why I think it's so important for people to be out of pain. Say, I mean, I get really mad at doctors. A lot of my patients, you know, who had things wrong with them. And I mean, I had one person who was in a terrible accident. I mean, and when I met them, they were in a coma. They'd been there for 6 years, laying in this thing, suspended, right? In a room with nothing there to get their attention, right? And the reason I went was this nurse, very cool nurse, got a job working in this place, and she went and put headphones on all the 6 people in her ward and played the Neurosonics tapes. Got the tape recorder for each of them and turned the Neurosonics, and every hour she'd get up and put a new tape on. And all of their bed sores disappeared. They began to gain weight. Their mental levels that they were reading, they started getting all kinds of signs. And so she wrote a letter saying, is there anything I could do? It would be nice that we're getting all these good results, but there isn't anything on the Neurosonics tapes to tell you to wake the fuck up, right? So I made a tape and sent it to her. And all it has on the tape is things like a telephone ringing over and over and over and over again. Every once in a while, a voice yells, can you get that, please? Not really what we would consider modern medicine, but it worked. Now, I realize I'm kind of a practical sort of guy, and I do have a weird imagination, but then I did things like, I put on it things like, wake up! Will you just wake up? You know, because if you don't tell people that, they won't, right? Instead, they give them a nice, quiet environment with sedate music, or what I like to call muzak, or music, you know. I mean, the music in this place was, and then the tape had been playing for so many years, it was stretched out, so it was like, it had things like Beatles songs played in muzak, you know, things like, Lucy in the sky, or a dorm room. Now, if you're in a coma, I'm sure warming sound like that isn't going to help you to wake up much. But when they had the first person woke up, they called me, and I was excited. I thought, oh, that's just cool. So I flew out there, and I met this person, and they still were physically just fucked up, and they were in pain. I mean, they'd really been hurt in this accident. And it's even all these years had gone by, you know, they had tremendous pain. And so I said to the doctor, I said, cool. I said, how about some Demerol? Have you got any Demerol? And the guy said, you want me to give the patient Demerol? And I said, no, I want the Demerol. I said, of course I want you to give the patient Demerol. Where the fuck are you, man? The person's in pain. And they said, well, I said, I think maybe a couple of aspirin. And I said, they've already taken an aspirin, okay? I said, they're in excruciating pain. I said, look at them. Their face was like this. I said, you know, they come out of a coma. I said, if you don't get them out of pain, they're going to go back in. And he goes, well, And I said, what? Is this out of your drug supply? I mean, is it that you don't want to give it up? You know? Is there not enough Demerol for her and you? I mean, what's the story here? And he said, well, can't we give her something that doesn't have, like, all those side effects? And I said, what, like feeling good? And he said, well, you know, it could be highly addictive. I said, so what? Wouldn't being addicted be better than being a vegetable? And he's gone... And I said, look, if you want some too, it's okay. I said, but if you don't give her the drugs, your dick will never work again. And then I thought, maybe I better come up with a better threat. That might already be true. But I managed to squeeze some out of them, because as soon as people feel good, they start healing. And in the United States, we spend $1 billion every year trying to take the good feeling out of drugs. And I happen to personally think that's a fucking waste of time, right? They're outlawing everything. Comfrey root tea, you need a prescription for. Excuse me, I've given people country root tea for years. I used it anytime your stomach's a little upset and your digestive tract, you know, you can take all those fucking antacids, or you can drink 2 cups of country root tea, as hot as you can get it down, as fast as you can. Your temperature will raise up, and when it goes down, you'll relax totally and you'll feel fine. And none of the people I've ever given it to have gotten cancer from it. They said it's a carcinogen. Well, yes, if you inject it, yes, it could be. But I don't really inject comfrey root tea. And on the other hand, I don't inject 5 grams of it a day. Synthesized down, of course, you know, to me. And also, I am not a rat. There are some people on this planet that there isn't much difference from. But, you know, I would say the way I work, and see, to begin with, rats are only this fucking big, right? I'm a little bigger than that. And so, you know, they say, well, we gave rats 5 grams of this synthesized down into its purest form, injected it every day, and the rats got cancer. And I said, well, you know what that proves to me? Rats should learn to stay away from researchers. And by the way, it's not nice to pick on animals. I said, how would you like it if a great big 600-foot thing picked you up and jammed a fucking big needle in your ass? And he smiled. This is why Richard always carries with him a cat of nine tails. It's a whip, by the way. Some of you look confused. Some of you nodded. It's that thing. When I was through with him, I could ask for anything I wanted, and he said, yes, master, may I have another? Because I've always believed that when it gets down to the bottom line, that you have to be able to enjoy yourself, and sometimes you just have to say, on your knees, slave boy. That some people, their conscious mind is not going to do it. Now, what I want you to do is to realize this is only about one thing, joy, real joy, the kind that's in every cell of the body. So when you sit down, okay, I don't want you to amplify what they're not able to do, what their stomach stops them from doing, where they hesitate. When you sit down and you have them think of something that they hesitate to deal with in a way that they feel like they're really doing something, but they know other people can, and they also know that genetically they're not different, but it's just the way they feel that gets in the way. And then when you have to stop and say, well, forget about that, you say, but when you have them do it, this is a little trick. Temporal predicates are incredibly powerful. And I tell people, I want you to think about this and have that feeling of hesitation for the last time. It's a great hypnotic command. I go, do it just one last time, just for me. And they go, and I go, thank you. Because as soon as they do it, they've agreed that it's the last time. Cool, huh? See, that's why I said to her, I want you to go back and think about the thing that you used to feel. Right? Put it in the past. What was it? Put it back there. When people walk in, sometimes I go, you have a terrible problem, didn't you? And they'll go, I'm sorry, I can't remember why I'm here. Hey, if that's all it takes, that's enough. Now, when you turn around and say, now, I know there's something in your life that was irresistible. When it was there, it's a food, you had to eat it, something you had to do, that even thinking about it makes every cell in your body light up, right? And as you're saying it, keep listing things like that until you notice them go. And you say, that's it, that's right now. Take that picture and make it bigger. Turn up the brightness, turn up the volume. Make it so that it's a 40 by 40 foot screen, surround the sound, 3D, till you see them beginning to glow in the dark. Now, if you don't see any changes, reach over and go, hey, either grab a hold of their genitals, their nose, or an ear, and say, follow instructions. Were you in there using bad tonality? No. Now, when I ask you to make a picture, I don't care if you see it consciously. This is of no interest to me, as long as you're doing it, and I can tell. And then add in some things that aren't there. Throw in some voices. Throw in trumpets. Throw in a cash register. Whatever it takes. Because if you succeed at this, the chrome gods will sing. And if you have enough, put in some trumpets. Put in a fanfare. Right? I find this is helpful for everything. I'm so depressed. I'm fearful of everything. See how that just won't work? You memorize that in your head, and I got news for you. You are going to have a lot of trouble being a fuck-up and a failure. And poverty, boy, you can try it, but you just won't be able to pull it off. You know, when you look at opportunity and you're playing that fanfare, it's just really hard to not do it, right? I mean, and when you think about it, you know, because that's not, there are really no horns there, by the way. It's all synthesizer. Just to imagine, that's all synthetic. I love, it's such a wonderful age to be a musician. And those particular horns that are on there, there's three different patches put together that I experimented with combinations of horns, oh, I'd say for about 5 weeks. And underneath those horns is something else, a little thing that the human ear can't hear that vibrates the nervous system. Because what I did was measure the vibrations on the vocal cords, right on the edge, the little hairs on the vocal cords, at the moment just before people have an orgasm. And I put that in there because I figured if you want to affect neurology, why screw around? Because it really isn't that exciting of a horn piece now, is it? If you really think about it, but something inside it makes it sound real special. Now, the thing is that the sensations you're after is you want to be able to find the state that creates this wanton drooling fetish, for lack of a better term, the thing where something is irresistible. So I want you to watch their lower lips should fill out, their skin should get pink. You should notice that the smile that they get is not like this, but soft and big. And keep at it. And remember, the way to get it is to go into the state before you ask about it. That's what the other exercise was about. See, this all fits together in some mysterious way. Because if you go into the state and then come out and throw that thunderbolt and use your tonality and you talk about excitement, right? Because if I walk around here and I find somebody going, now, remember that time where you had that thing you really wanted? You know, the thrilling thing? You're going to feel this pain on the side of your head, you know, and suddenly you'll see my fingers wrapping around your throat. And it may be the last thing you experience before you transmutate into the next life. But when you get there, I have friends waiting, and it's going to get ugly. So best you just enjoy yourself, okay? Because if I find any more unpleasantness in your life, remember, I'm the kind of guy that doesn't play fair. Once you've been in a workshop with me, I will be watching you for the rest of your life. And either way you look about it, I have ways of knowing things. And when you find yourself acting like an idiot and yelling and whining at your kids, suddenly you're going to feel uneasy. There's a reason for that. So you better get down and start feeling joy every fucking day. Otherwise, things will come out of the darkness in the night. Odd shapes, scary things. Just to remind you, only because I love you. But you know that diamonds are forever things? If you're Irish and you say the word diamond, think about the accent. Somebody said, and what's that book by that guy, Joyce? Boy, it shows you our school system is about. And they go, James who? Joyce was probably the greatest writer that ever lived. And he taught me an appreciation because when he said, well, you know, the diamonds are everywhere. Suddenly I realized the way it spelled demons. When somebody says to me, well, you know, I bought my wife a diamond ring. I go, really? That's different. And which diamond did you get? And they said, a solitaire. And I said, ah, I know him. He's very powerful. And they always look at me and go, what are you talking about? And I said, well, you know, he lives in stones. Did you know that? And they go, well, of course it's a stone. And I said, you don't understand. I said, bring your wife over. I'll check. And I looked, and he wasn't there, so I put him there. He's been a good boy ever since, I have to admit. We found out something terrible that he was doing. He actually was getting mad at his wife for taking too long getting dressed. Can you imagine that? Doesn't he know anything about the universal laws of physics? If you want your wife to be ready at a certain time, you tell her it's a different time. What's the matter with these guys, you know? I don't understand. If I want my wife to leave at 8, I tell her 7. And usually we're out of the house by at least 9. Now, grab yourself a partner, and I want you to make sure that from the moment you find this person and sit down and introduce yourself, that every word you utter, every sound you make counts. Make this so special that for the rest of your life, you can make every moment special. Everything you do with other people, everything you do with your kids, the more you make every moment count and every moment wonderful, the more it will be. It sounds simple, because it is. Don't ever be too busy to be alive. You know, if you're waiting in line at the bank, I look around and go, well, how am I going to have fun here? And I look at the person behind me and I go, hi. They always like to look behind them and they go, are you talking to me? And I go, yes. I said, I have a few questions. I'm doing a survey. And they go, oh, okay. And I go, now, you know those times when you're having trouble having sex? And they go, huh? And I said, well, you were just thinking about it a minute ago. They go, how did you know that? And I go, it's on the form. The one that they really, really freaks them out is I was in Nordstrom's recently, and there was a woman crying her eyes out. I was so sad. She was there. She was just crying, and she was sitting at the counter, and these two sales girls were consoling her and running around, and I walked up, and I looked at her, and I said, ma'am, I said, something's wrong. And she looked up, and she said, you can't help me. Nobody can help me. My life is over. And I said, no, ma'am. I said, I can find the ring for you if you want me to. And she looked at me, and she said, and the sales girl said, she lost her engagement ring. And I said, yeah, an emerald ring. And she went, who are you? And I said, well, I don't work here. I said, I'm just passing through. I said, actually, I was on my way upstairs. I needed underwear, but I have a minute. And I walked over into the store, and I separated two things, and I reached down, and I picked up the ring, and I walked over and handed it to her and said, here. And the salespeople said the funniest thing to me. They said, we've been looking for 2 hours. And I said, well, obviously not in the right place. I said, if you want to find something, you have to go to where it is. And they said, but, and I said, and the woman was just, and she said, how can I ever thank you? And I said, well, I said, when you put the ring on, I want you to think of your husband, and I want you to realize that sometimes in the future, you're going to get angry at each other. And the minute you start to get angry, I want you to remember how you feel now. Lucky that you're not going to lose him. And that'll be enough. And she looked up at me and she went, who are you? And I said, if you don't do this, you'll find out. Now, they were confused about how I knew what I knew. You know how I knew? I can read lips. See, extrasensory perception. I was across the room. I could tell exactly what they were saying. I was deaf for a while. I learned to read lips. It's really pretty easy. Just get the transcript of any movie. Turn the sound off. Read along with it so that you move your lips like them. And then slowly make it so the voice isn't on the outside, that it's on the inside. Then you move your lips just minimally. Pretty soon you don't have to move your lips at all. You can just hear the voices in your head. And it comes in real handy, especially buying a car. You know, they go in the back and talk to each other.